Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Cindy S. Solomon coming to you today on Monday, May 7th with the Global Product Management Talk. The Global Product Management Talk is curated for product professionals who can't leave their desks to engage in product talks on a regular basis. It is a weekly mini product camp Socratic discussion with pre-posted questions and live audio of thought leader and co-host commenting during the live broadcast. You can join us by following at PRODMGMTTALK, and that is your ticket to finding out information about Global Product Management Talk. Use the hashtag pound PRODMGMTTALK. Visit our website at www.prodmgmttalk.com and search for us on all social media, as well as at Blog Talk Radio, where you can listen to us live and hear our past podcasts, and also on iTunes and other mobile applications. We are brought to you today by the AIPMM, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management, which is the hub of all things product management, and where product professionals go for answers. It is the world's largest professional organization of product managers, brand managers, product marketing managers, user experience managers, and other individuals responsible for guiding their organizations and clients through a constantly changing business landscape. It is the only organization that represents those who manage the entire product lifecycle throughout any industry. For more information about the AIPMM, visit the website at www.aipmm.com. Upcoming webinars by the AIPMM are Brian Lawley of the 280 Group, who is also a speaker here on the Global Product Management Talk next week, and Hector D. Castillo. Their subject matter is always about forwarding the product management profession in your career within product management. So check it out at the website, aipmm.com. Today we are talking about how to develop a compelling value proposition with Jeff Flash. Developing a compelling value proposition is one of the most important aspects of product development. A value proposition is a short summary of the value which a product will deliver to customers. Without it, product managers and product teams struggle or get stuck in the swirl trying to define what they're building, for whom, why that matters, and how that can be translated into product success. Today, we are talking about how to develop a strong value proposition for new and existing products alike. I'm delighted to have Jeff Flash as our showcase speaker. He is a product management thought leader and the author of How to Be a Good Product Manager. He has 10 years plus of experience in development of web-based products and services with companies including Elsevier, MasterCard International, and Xplane. He is the author of the excellent blog, How to Be a Good Product Manager, at www.goodproductmanager.com. He's been published in the books 42 Rules of Product Management and 42 Rules of Product Marketing, and he is co-founder of Product Camp St. Louis. He is currently Vice President, Product Portfolio Management within the Clinical Decision Support Division of Elsevier. Okay, also joining us today is Roger Coven as co-host, who has been a past speaker. He's a product manager, product strategist, blogger, and I also want to introduce Erica Anderson, who's been a past speaker. She's a co-founder of Product Camp Utah. She's a product manager creating great experiences with 12 years experience in new industries, technologies, and domains. She's helped Fortune 500 companies save over $1 billion to work as a multidisciplinary hub. She has breadth and depth in multiple fields, including business, engineering, design, law, and accounting. Product Camp Utah is coming up this weekend. Erica, can you tell us more about it?
Yes, it's coming up May 12th on Saturday at 9 a.m. at C7 Data Centers in Bluffdale. We have about 100 people signed up to come and over a dozen sessions proposed right now. The first 100 people who get there will all get free T-shirts. If you want to sign up, go to pcamputah.org to register.
Excellent. And I will be there.
Yay!
Yeah, I'm very excited. If you don't know about Product Camp, check out it at PRODMGMTTALK. Go down in the navigation and look at product events, and you can see a global map. Product Camp's happening all over the world, as well as a schedule for the upcoming ones. By the way, this is Cindy F. Solomon. You can find out more about me at cindyfsolomon.com. I am a product management evangelist and content developer, product management issues. I am very excited to have some new courses in product management being offered in San Francisco on June 20th through 22nd. One is on creating successful products, and the other is on product innovation leadership. I will be talking more about them. You can register for them by following the tweet, and I may be able to offer a discount for the active participants in the San Francisco Bay Area. Welcome to D8A_Driven, who's joined in the Twitter sphere. He's talking about surveys are easy, good interviews are harder, cross-connecting them to produce a working persona the hardest. Welcome, Roadmap Warrior. We haven't seen her in a while. Let me turn it over to our speaker, Jeff, and our co-host. Give us some context. We have some pre-posted questions, but as always, you are welcome to ask me questions and participate on Twitter.
Well, thanks for the introduction, and thanks for people joining on Twitter and listening. Glad to have my co-host here as well. I've known Roger for a while, and it's been a while since we talked, so it's good to talk to him. This topic kind of came about because in working with product managers that I work with and also talking with a lot of people who are more in the entrepreneurial or startup world, you know, value proposition is something that is important, but a lot of people don't tend to necessarily maybe give it the attention or thought that it deserves. So I thought it'd be a good topic because it certainly is important to product managers, but is really relevant to a lot of different people working in various areas of new product development and new business development. Yeah, I mean, the first question I kind of pose is, you know, what are some of the challenges in developing the value proposition? I've heard a number of things from people I've talked to, but I'm just kind of curious from the people on the call here, Roger, your perspective as well. I mean, from my point of view, sometimes this is basically not even knowing that you really have to have one, or it's writing it from more of an internally focused point of view versus an external market customer focused point of view.
Yeah, I'll chime in here. And again, this is Roger Cobbin. I'm a product manager in Austin, Texas. I currently work for Dachis Group, and I like to say that I help companies make smart product decisions. And I think that really value propositions are a fundamental component of that, and that really having a compelling value proposition should really drive most of your product decisions. And so it's obviously very important, and I think some of the challenges involved are really, in addition to what you mentioned, Jeff, about just knowing that it can be important to have one, it's really knowing the criteria that you would use in order to develop. How would you know that you've found a good value proposition? You obviously don't want to wait until 6 months, a year down the road and discover from product revenue whether you developed a good value proposition. You want to have some criteria that you can use in advance and sort of be testing very quickly to determine whether it's compelling or not. So I think we'll be getting into that with some of the future questions here in this call.
Yes, and I want to welcome John Newbery and Jose Brioni. So there's a lot of commentary out here on Twitter. D88_driven is asking, is this usually a problem with marketers? He usually faces it with engineering. John Newbery says the problem is losing sight of the target persona is a really great way to ruin your value proposition. Drifting to a please everyone result. Jose says the biggest problem that he has found is that companies are not used to talking in terms of value. They continue to talk about features and costs. And in many cases, they don't understand what they sell. They think they sell a product when in fact they sell a service. And I would take it further and say, in fact, they sell the experience that the user has.
There's a lot of comments. I think one thing that people run into is, again, internally focused. Someone mentioned, you know, talking about features and cost or, you know, the technology. I mean, when you think about really the value proposition is a way of saying, here's the value that we can bring you in solving this problem. So that implicit in that is you need to understand, you know, what is the problem that you are solving? Is it pervasive? Is it a problem that your target customer, your target persona actually faces? And is it a problem that they are willing to pay to have solved, or is there enough value there that can be captured by solving that problem? And I think the challenge in doing that is trying to articulate that in a, you know, one or two sentence synopsis. I think Roger can on something as well, is how do you know if you have a good one? And when I've seen it done well is when it's an iterative process versus kind of it being done by a group of people sitting around a table and saying, okay, we've got it, we've nailed our value proposition, now let's go out and build it, without ever looking, you know, in the rearview mirror to see, okay, does this need to be adjusted at all?
So I think one of maybe the fundamental things to address right here is, what does a compelling value proposition do for you? Why is a good value proposition important? Let's say you have the most excellent value proposition in the world. What does that imply for the success of your product and why?
I view that as something that is core to everything that you do, and it provides direction and guidance for all the different resulting activities. So a good value proposition is going to give direction to engineering and design and all the other people who are working on building the product, because it says, here's the value, here's why it's important, and who's going to pay for it, and why they value it. Because that gives a sense of purpose. It's valuable for the outbound marketing efforts, because that is, you know, the message that you're communicating. If you really understood the problem that the market faces, and you know that it's pervasive, you know that you can articulate it well in terms that the target customer cares about, then you can really communicate much better and more effectively. If you're in a situation where you're trying to get internal funding, you know, if you're a product manager within a large company, being able to articulate the value proposition is going to be important to get senior management support and get kind of the funding for your project. If you're in a situation where you're trying to get investment from outside the company, then obviously when you go to investors, VCs, you know, that's something that certainly in that community is expected. I think also, you know, there's other benefits, you know, when you're talking about employees, how to recruit employees, how to articulate the value of what you do, you know, in a competitive job market. You're involved with partners and the community and all these other kind of people that are maybe not as core to the product but tangentially related to what you're doing. If there's industry groups or other people like that that you are seeking to interact with, then being able to articulate the value proposition is maybe not as important as articulating it to your market, but it's still a message and a consistent message that you have.
So it sounds like a good value prop is important in many different ways, driving many different parts of product success internally and externally, on the external outbound marketing efforts as well as on the internal efforts to focus internal teams on developing the right product and understanding the context, the market context of what they're trying to build.
I think you're right. It's interesting because when you read all the kind of things in literature about, you know, value propositions and the people talking about it, a lot of it focused on have a good value proposition. So when you're talking to a VC, I've personally seen it just as valuable, if not more, when you're talking about it internally, because you might have a project where you have a salesperson, your marketing person, your engineering person, your product person, your design person, all have a slightly different view of what exactly it is we're building and why. And, you know, even if you don't do anything with it outside the company, outside the organization, just getting all your people internally on the same page is beneficial. And then obviously there's a benefit of making sure that resonates with the market and using it externally, but I personally have used it and seen it used as a very good team to kind of process to get the full team on board. Obviously you want to make sure that, you know, whatever you're developing internally actually does resonate with the market and you're identifying real problems and value propositions clear to your market. But I think sometimes we forget how useful it is for an internal communication tool.
And those internal efforts in a company really need to be linked to the external value, because if you're not developing internally for something that's going to resonate with the market, then you're not going to have success. And there's a challenge to doing that. There's sometimes a disconnect with the development team who's developing the product and really trying to make sure that you're anchoring to that value that is going to be perceived by the market. A value proposition ties those two together for both sides. It ties it together so that the external-facing folks like sales and marketing can communicate the value to the market, as well as those internal development teams being able to stay anchored to real value.
Welcome, Coconut Eclipse, John Newbery. He reiterates great value proposition is essential before product managers can secure the resources, funding, buy-in they need to develop. Roadmap Warrior says, having a clear value proposition makes your solution the only answer to the buyer's problem in his mind. And thank you, Erica, for suggesting that we use VP as an acronym for value proposition, saves a lot of characters on Twitter.
Yeah, I think data-driven made a good point with respect to the reality check. Sometimes, and this really does allude back to what Jeff mentioned earlier about the company itself understanding that they need to create a value proposition or they need to determine the value proposition for their product. Because if they don't, they may be, or if they go through that exercise of trying to develop their value proposition, they may discover that they need to pivot a bit on their strategy and on what they're building. Because sometimes they don't really stop to think about what is the real value of this product that we're building. It's a mechanism for forcing the company to really consider what they're doing and what they're building.
One of the other questions I had is, you know, there's all this interest right now in the lean startup and customer development and all these various tools that I think are incredibly useful and valuable, both for small companies and large companies. But how does a value proposition fit into the idea of being lean and agile? Because developing a value proposition, in one respect, it seems something you spend a lot of time doing and have kind of a value proposition that's fairly static, and the lean startup and customer development proponents talk about being able to pivot, and you look at a lot of successful companies that have really changed their value propositions tremendously, I mean, really completely different over time. In talking with some people who are, again, more on the entrepreneurial side, I think they almost view it as, oh, well, you know, we'll figure it out over time, and almost as an excuse to just kind of go off and start doing things, versus the way I view it as having at least hypothesis value proposition to start with and then validating that, getting additional input from the market and having that change over time, certainly based on what's happening.
Yeah, so a little bit of background on that I think I might be able to contribute here. With lean startup and customer development processes, you're kind of taking agile and you're making sure that it's applied not just at the development level, but across the entire product effort. So you're not only just iterating on the building of the product, the implementation of the product, but on the very conception of the product, on its value proposition, on which problems you choose to solve in the marketplace, on any number of assumptions that you've made that lie behind the implementation decisions that you're making for the product. And so what you do with lean startup and customer development processes is you document things like your value prop, problems that you're intending to solve, your basic solution, the sort of key activities that users will engage in as they use the product, and things like that. And as you do that, you examine the sort of hypotheses and assumptions that you're making along the way. And you can even go so far as to formulate those assumptions in measurable terms. You can make predictions about usage of the product. How many people are going to try the product? What percentage of them are going to go to the next step and complete one of your key activities that you assumed was going to occur? What percentage of those register on, let's say, you know, your web application, your website? So you formulate those kinds of assumptions as measurable tests, and then you immediately figure out the quickest possible way of building product that begins to test those assumptions that you've made. And then you can very quickly start to pivot and adjust the assumptions as you find that they are not necessarily entirely true. Some of them will be verified, some of them will be falsified, and you can then feed that into the future decisions that you make about your product. And one of those fundamental assumptions that you make, or set of assumptions that you make, has to do with your value proposition. And so that's a really important one to try to test and get right as quickly as you can. And a lot of times you won't get it right initially. And so you need to figure out how you're going to test it very quickly. Does that sound right to you, Jeff?
Yeah, no, I think that's a very good description. I think, and it makes sense, and it certainly falls in line with what I know and what I've seen done well. I think it's similar to like when people first hear about Agile, there's people who maybe misinterpreted or only, you know, stop listening after the first few sentences and think it means, oh, we don't need to document, we don't need to plan, and it's in fact quite the opposite. I think it's the same thing with a lot of the lean startup methodology, in that you're right. You know, it is exactly as you're describing it. It needs to evolve over time, but you need to have a starting point. You need to be focused on how do you test that. And I think some people probably misinterpret it and think, oh, you know, all that planning and all that upfront, you know, that's too much upfront. We're lean. We don't have to do that. And like many things, it's a misinterpretation or a partial interpretation.
For those who are interested in learning more about the lean startup concept that Jeff has brought up here, there's a guy named Ash Maurya. I believe that's how you pronounce his last name, and it's Ashmaurya. He's actually a local here in Austin, Texas, but he's taken a lot of the lean startup ideas from some of the popular figures like Eric Ries and others, and he's really done a good job pulling the best of all of those ideas and combining them into sort of coherent combination of a lot of the ideas from the leading figures in lean startup and customer development processes.
Does he map them to product management process?
You know, that's the thing that's really impressive about his work. He has a blog, by the way. You should be able to find it by doing a Google search on his name. What's really impressive about him is he really gets product management. Like, he doesn't, you know, use the term a lot necessarily, but he's really coming from the point of view of product management on most of his in most of what he writes. And he's actually another thing that I was really impressed with, and of course I'm getting a reputation myself for always talking about Al Ries and Jack Trout, but he actually mentions Al Ries and Jack Trout in his book, and I'm trying to remember the name of Ash's book, but in his book he mentions that if you really want to understand how to formulate a good value prop, actually, he says you need to read Ries and Trout and understand the concept of positioning.
When you read about positioning, you talk about how positioning needs to change over time as well, right? You know, you establish a position in a market, the competitive landscape changes, you need to reposition your product. I think it's the same thing with a value proposition. I mean, even if you successfully launch something with an existing value proposition, you know, that's going to change over time. You know, your competitive differentiation when you go into the market 5 years later might be completely different because the market's caught up. I think the idea of linking value propositions to positioning is a good one. Actually, that was when I was thinking about, you know, we were talking about different potential topics for this product management talk. That was another one I was thinking of, is I think the value of positioning is incredibly underrelated, and I think certainly goes hand in hand with value proposition. A good value proposition that has been, you know, tested can help develop your positioning, help confirm your positioning, and hopefully make you, you know, more successful going to market.
I think you were making a key point there, Jeff. Could you repeat it so we can tweet it?
Yeah, I was going to say that I think value proposition and positioning go hand in hand. I think, you know, the two are interrelated. To Roger's point, you know, you really need to understand positioning, and the recent Trout books are excellent resources for that. But, you know, a good value proposition will really help you position the product, and that will, I think, drive a lot of, you know, what you're trying to do, what one of the benefits of the value proposition and communicating out to the market and figuring out what your acquisition strategy is, what your marketing mediums you're going to use, you know, what the buyer personas are and what their concerns are. I think I see that as one of the kind of core elements of developing a product. Unfortunately, as I've, you know, what I've seen is the products developed based on some limited understanding of the market, and then it's, oh, we need to kind of articulate the value proposition. Oh, yeah, and then we need to position it after most of the work has already been done.
Yeah, positioning is often an afterthought.
So the next is, who owns the value proposition? Who develops it? Who's responsible for articulating it, doing the testing around it? I think in a small startup type environment, I think everyone really has a hand in it, but at the end of the day, there needs to be probably one person who's, you know, who's able to drive it and articulate it. So I'm curious to see what...
I mean, ideally, it would be the product manager, and as we were discussing offline, Jeff, I think user experience people jump in there in identifying the value proposition, starting from the user experience, and also feel that they're included too late.
Again, everyone should be involved. I think ultimately it's the product manager or someone in that role who needs to own the value proposition, because to me, the value proposition is directly tied to the positioning, which I was always taught that, you know, the positioning is kind of that key linchpin that connects product management and product marketing. So yeah, so Bruce McCarthy saying, yeah, product manager owns the value proposition but needs to facilitate consensus. I think that's true. The only exception I would say is if you're in, again, a smaller startup environment, you might have the CEO or the founder. But in that case, again, in many cases, that person is also wearing the product manager hat as well. Been involved in some things related to with marketing and product marketing, feels like they need to own it, which I don't think. I think product marketing certainly needs to be involved, but in my experience, for practical purposes, in most cases, the product marketers aren't the ones out as much doing that iterative customer development. So they're, you know, certainly good contributors and can contribute to the outbound marketing efforts, but may not be in the best position to kind of own the overall positioning, especially if we talked about earlier that the value proposition is what's going to be used to drive the development of the product, which is usually the product marketer, the product manager's responsibility, and working with the development team to actually get the development of the product.
So I think that data-driven is pretty much right on the mark. I'm glad you sort of pointed out one of his tweets on it where he says that the product manager owns the value prop but needs to facilitate consensus. The only quibble that I would have with that is sort of based on the notion that to really have the most effective product team, what you want is a team that feels shared ownership of product and the value proposition. They all need to feel the ownership. It should not be a situation, ideally, it's not a situation on a team where it's like, oh, product manager owns this, and I will defer always to the product manager. It's more like you want everybody to be aligned and everybody to be excited about the value proposition and understand it and agree on its value. That may sound maybe a little bit like a panacea and not always easy to achieve, but that's what you should strive to achieve. And if you do that, it's a little bit dangerous to try to assign a single person ownership, even if it's true that the product manager plays a very special role in terms of their expertise in understanding the market problems and the marketing principles that drive a compelling value proposition. So I do think that the product manager does play a very important linchpin role there, but it does need to be a somewhat facilitative role where they're enabling the rest of the team to feel shared ownership of the value prop.
I think maybe consensus is not the right word, and probably not having a lot of time to think about this. I think consensus to me implies that you get everyone in agreement on it and everyone's happy with it, which may not be the case, right? Because it's ultimately the market's going to drive where the value proposition is going. You know, I've been in situations where you have, you know, people within the company who are important stakeholders who may not necessarily understand or know exactly what the market's looking for, and they're pushing for a certain direction. So the consensus implies you're going to get everyone kind of in a democratic agreement on that. I think you do need to get everyone owning it. You do need to get everyone aligned on this, how you actually go about developing it. As I think it's a bit semantic just in the word, but I think it's relevant because I've seen some product managers who are new to the job, you know, they're focused on trying to get all the internal stakeholders in agreement. And, you know, if you're doing your good job as a product manager, some of the internal people are not going to be happy some of the time. More than some of the time in some cases. You know, if you're trying to go after a new market segment, if you're trying to propose a product that's going to be revolutionary, is going to cannibalize existing products within the company, you know, those are things that are going to rub people the wrong way. And so I don't think you're ever going to get necessarily 100% alignment on it, but at least you know, that's where you use market data to try and support what you're doing.
And when you look at sort of the Steve Jobs style of product management, and in a lot of ways he was the product manager on a lot of Apple's products fundamentally, he was, at least I don't look at how he approached it as consensus building. He was very forceful. He was he faced a lot of resistance for his ideas within Apple, and he just had to put his foot down a lot. I do think ultimately that he was sort of very forcefully making his point and perhaps was creating consensus in the end, but it certainly was not this sort of, oh, let's all get together and talk about stuff and agree on it. It was much more forceful than that.
Apple jar for being the first person to bring up Apple.
Yeah.
37 minutes, so that's pretty impressive. Usually it's within the first, like, 3 minutes, so.
Yeah, I started taking a count at startup events I was going to, how many times it's mentioned.
referring to, like, CompuServe and Prodigy as my product example, just to, you know, completely go against the tide.
The thing is that that kind of dates you to talk about CompuServe and Prodigy. I remember them. They were pre AOL.
I remember them.
Yeah.
So maybe this is a good segue into the next question. I would raise the point that what Steve Jobs did was he basically said, what we need to agree on is fundamentally what is important, what should drive the product. And there were certain principles that he really cared about. And he just really had very high standards, and he was not willing to compromise in a lot of ways on achieving realizing the kinds of visions that he had and the principles involved, usability, of course, being a big one. I think that kind of leads into the next question with respect to what constitutes a good or compelling value proposition. If you can get your team to agree on that, then consensus becomes much easier as far as agreeing on a particular value proposition for your product.
Maybe even want to draw the distinction. I think there's a difference between a good value proposition and a compelling one. You know, what exactly that line is, I'm not quite sure. But, you know, I think a good one is one that someone reads it and they understand it. They say, yep, that makes sense. I understand what it is. It seems logical, and I would agree that it. I think compelling is one, you know, is that maybe next level where it really is something that would, you know, get someone to open up their wallet and pay, you know, right then. I mean, it's the difference between saying, you know, yes, I would buy that if you created it, and when can I have it? I need it now. I mean, I'm personally interested in, is there a way to quantify it or measure it? You know, how do you know when you've gotten a good one? You read articles about some of the, you know, startup incubators, and you're continually massaging and fine-tuning the value propositions and the phrasing and the wording, and, you know, I'm not sure how much of it is trying to kind of hit on the right things because they want to say the things that VCs care about, or how much of it is really actually fine-tuning it based on better articulating what the value proposition is.
So that's a good point. So there's the notion of what constitutes a good value proposition, and there might be some criteria in that, like solving a problem in the marketplace, a compelling problem in the marketplace, differentiating against competitive offerings. There are things like that. But you're also raising the additional point of, okay, let's say you apply all of those principles to developing a value proposition. Now, how do you test whether that really was compelling? What does it mean for that to be compelling? That's a very good question. Do you have any ideas about how you would measure whether a value proposition was compelling?
Certainly, I think there's ways to test it. You're talking to people, trying to articulate it. The best example I can think of, and this was not for a value proposition, but for products in the market. This was many years ago. I was visiting a customer, and this was an enterprise purchase that was then used by people within the organization. And, you know, they, in this case, the customer purchased the product I was managing and a competitor product as well. It was a situation where the organization might purchase multiple products. And, you know, I said, so what would happen if you canceled our product today? Well, you know, tomorrow I'd come in and, you know, be a bunch of probably some upset phone messages and people with, you know, who'd send me emails and they'd be upset and they'd complain about it, but they'd kind of get used to it. I said, okay, well, what happened if you canceled a competitor product? And the person said, you know, there'd be a line of people with pitchforks and you know, flaming sticks at the door blocking my entrance to my office. They'd be that upset. So to me, that's the difference between a good and compelling, you know. Now, at a value proposition level, I think, you know, it's maybe a bit harder to kind of draw the line and test that. Because really, you know, if you're following, you know, a bunch of different formats, but a sentence or two or a paragraph at most, I think, you know, again, likelihood to pay, you know, how much value, I think almost some of it is subjective to, you know, what their reaction is. Again, is it, you know, yeah, I'm interested in that. Let me know when you have it available versus I'd be willing to sign you a check today. Someone here kind of pointed out, yeah, one of the comments here, you know, put it in front of 20 people and see how many of them will pay you for the product right now. You know, that's you know, if people are willing to set up a deposit, put a deposit down on it after you show them the value proposition, that's probably a good sign. But I really don't know. That's kind of why I'm curious what other people think about, you know, is there a way to kind of articulate that, the difference?
What if we tie it back to some of the discussion of the very first question, which was, necessarily directly the first question, but it was related. What does a good value, good or compelling value proposition do for you? Well, if one of the things that it does for you is internally gel the product team, the development team, and align them to what's going to be valuable in the marketplace, then how can you test that? How can you test the, in other words, how can you test the value proposition's quality in terms of helping to drive things internally, the internal development efforts? Then there's also those the external part of it where that you mentioned where, you know, maybe you could test it by putting the value proposition on the table and seeing if people would pay for it. Finding out the quickest path to getting people to put money on the table for that value proposition. It strikes me that one of the most important things is the idea of value proposition being expressible as a single focused theme, category, or idea. Something that where people can create a very quick association between the product, between the brand, and its value. And in order to do that, you can't make it complicated. It has to be something that is they can conceive in their mind very quickly and carve out a place in their brain for your brand name and associate it with that one word or that simple term or idea that represents your value proposition.
So aren't you now talking about the branding?
On the internal side, I mean, to me, I think to your points, Roger, I think the internal discussion, I mean, I found, at least in my experience, it's a lot easier to get internal alignment on a value proposition, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a compelling, crosses that line between want to have and need to have. So, I mean, I think it is good and useful to get alignment on that, to get everyone on the same page, but as far as, you know, how do you know when you really got something that resonates? I think it's a challenge. I mean, and I think, honestly, I think the other thing is that you really, at that point, really probably can't test just the value proposition. You need, you know, the value proposition is a driver for a demo, a prototype, something in more depth that can then help you answer that question, which then validates the value proposition. But I think it'd be probably pretty hard to kind of quantitatively assess the value proposition itself with just, you know, a sentence or two on its own, because at that level, you know, the nuances between a product, an extraordinary product and a basic product, are probably pretty minimal. I mean, I'm thinking of if you went back and developed the value proposition for the iPod when it was first created, and now I don't feel bad mentioning Apple since Brian already opened the box, but, you know, the value proposition for an iPod is, you know, for people who want to listen to music on the go, the iPod will help you organize your music collection. Unlike other music devices, this organizes your entire collection and makes the whole music listening experience, you know, an ecosystem, one simplified experience. Well, I had an MP3 player at the time, and, I mean, you probably could have written that very same value proposition for that MP3 player, even though that company's probably out of business and that experience was not as compelling. I mean, the beauty and the real value add is in how it actually, you know, not in how you described it, but how it actually worked. So maybe I'm going back on what I originally said, and, you know, maybe it's, you really, at that level, can't, maybe the value proposition isn't what's going to close the sale, but more open the door to then, you know, get people really interested in something that can then help you close the sale.
There's a discussion about KPIs, developing KPIs for a value proposition. Suggestions that KPIs could be arguments per week, the average meeting length, the number of proposed features that don't match the value proposition per sprint. So they're really taking it down into a task level. That's data-driven, discussing it with Milosky. How to define KPIs for your value proposition, and how do you measure the internal value. So data-driven suggesting measure the internal value of the value proposition by meeting length. So I really have to ask him what he means by meeting length.
I'd just like to chime in and say that going back a little bit and explaining some of the context of what we were talking about, Reese and Trout state they have a law of focus that states that the most powerful concept in marketing is owning a word in the prospect's mind. So that's part of what a value prop is about. It's about owning some territory in the prospect's mind and that being able to drive sales of your product. without having to go through a lot of expensive marketing. Instead, if you can just come up with this singular idea that you can associate with your brand, then you have something very powerful. So I think any KPIs or a lot of the things that you're going to want to measure and test about your value proposition to see whether it's a compelling one have to somehow tie back and measure the extent to which that value proposition is going to at least have the potential to occupy a place in the mind of the prospect.
That really gets to, you know, one aspect. We haven't really talked about what form does a value proposition take, but most of what I've seen are similar to the one that was defined in Crossing the Chasm, you know, for this customer who blank, you know, our product is blank, that, you know, provides some benefit, and unlike our competitors, ours has a differentiation. So, I mean, I think they don't have to necessarily be in that format, but something similar to that. And I think, Roger, you're kind of hitting on that last part of, you know, what is the differentiation? You know, what, let's say Volvo, right? You know, Volvo is safety, right? They own that word in the mind of the customer. You know, if you think safe car, you think Volvo. If you think fast, sexy car, you probably don't think Volvo, but that's okay because they own that position of mind. So, you know, their value proposition focuses on that. I think kind of highlights the importance of the value proposition and the positioning being something you think about very, very early on, probably before you start developing the product, instead of, all right, we've already built this product, now how do we position it? Because at that point, you really can't, you know, there's only so much you can do, the, you know, lipstick on a pig at that point. It's really, okay, if we're going to say that this is about efficiency, if our product is about luxury, if our product is about style, if our product is about safety, you know, those are things that some attributes that need to be built into the product. You can certainly, you know, focus your messaging on that, but if you're saying that your product is about quality, yet it's a low-quality product, well, then it's going to be an impossible mission.
Chris Yeh of PB Works, who's a VC here in the Valley, talked about finding the market before you begin the build of the product. So not even starting to build until you know what market you want to target and reach. Aligned with that, value proposition would be before identifying the market or after identifying the market, here's what the value is to this market. We have the market, we have the value, now we can build based on that input in an ideal world.
You got to know who you're trying to solve a problem for before you can articulate what value it provides to them. Sometimes you don't. It doesn't actually happen in that order. You think, oh, here's a problem that market X is facing, and then you find out actually market X is facing this problem, but they won't pay me for it. But market Y has a similar problem. In an ideal world, you target, you know, you figure out your market first, and you figure out what the problems they have, which ones they're going to pay for, and then you kind of wrap it all together. I think in reality, it doesn't necessarily happen as sequentially as that. But I think the point applies if you can't articulate who the market is, then you really can't articulate your value proposition, because something that is valuable to me may not be valuable to Roger or, you know, different market segments. So, you know, that's where understanding who, you know, what your segmentation is, who the buyers are, who the users are, and what problems they face, the extent of those problems, how much they're willing to pay to have those problems solved, that's all needed as an input into creating a value proposition.
A value proposition should be compelling if it's true. A demo should allow you to prove it. Keith Bader, he's saying Volkswagen. Okay, Erica talking about value propositions of different cars. Who should be involved in creating and validating a value proposition?
Yeah, I mean, we'll say who shouldn't be involved or who maybe the mistakes should be made. I mean, I don't think there's anyone who shouldn't be involved. I think, again, for internal alignment purposes, it's good to have everyone involved. You know, again, it's not a democracy, so, you know, I don't count an engineer's vote as equal to a customer's vote, but I do think one thing I've seen maybe that people rely too much on is input from sales. In a direct sales model, yeah, there are teams who are out there talking to the customer, talking to the market, but again, they tend to be more focused on kind of existing problems or enhancements to existing products, and in general tend not to be as much focused on, you know, new problems and solved. And I've seen cases where people are kind of looking at the sales to help validate, you know, that, yeah, have we articulated the, is this the right messaging, is this the right promotion, when really sales is one voice to listen to, one input, but the view of sales might be completely different than the customer, the market, especially when we're talking about a different customer, a different buyer, a different buying behavior, a different buying process at the customer. I also think, especially I've talked to some people who have worked in startup environments or where areas where we have entrepreneurs who have very strong opinions, you know, again, that person has a vision for the product, and that's good, but again, that vision sometimes can focus the value proposition too much on here's what I think we should do or here's what technically we can build, especially where you have an engineering-led company, engineering-led startup. It tends to be the value proposition is really not a value proposition as much as it is a articulation of our technological advantage and why customers should care about that versus, you know, what problems customers should have and how we're going to solve them.
Excellent. That was just one voice. Thank you. Identified what the challenge is for product management, wrestling the focus away from development or away from sales and focusing on the market and identifying that data that you can test the value proposition against.
I think a product manager is differentiated from sales in that sales is interested in certain customers, certain things that they've heard typically, whereas a product manager's job is to look at the market. So that's one of the points there that I think you made. Another point is that a good product manager is trained in marketing principles as well, and being able to not just have all of the data on the market, but be able to synthesize that data and apply marketing principles in such a way that it ties it all together into actionable intelligence like a good value proposition. I do see the product manager as playing a key role in developing the value proposition. Again, it's something that you really want everybody to align with, but the product manager is bringing a unique set of skills to play.
So I've actually found it useful to, you know, get a lot of people involved in these workshops and things like this where you have different teams and different groups kind of creating their own value propositions. You bring them back together and you realize the deltas you have. And you say, okay, well, you know, you're talking about, you know, the value proposition for this product being around, you know, efficiency and time saving. For this one here, you're talking about quality. This one here, you're talking about overall effectiveness or whatever the case is, and you can make everyone articulate that, you can bring those discrepancies to light, and then you can, you know, you don't necessarily need to resolve them right away, but just say, look, you know, we've got a couple different approaches and avenues, and this is why we need to go test these things in the market, you know, versus assuming that everyone's on the same page. If you've ever done any work in an agile project, in a good practice that a lot of agile development projects use, first thing you do is get everyone together and articulate the value proposition. We've brought in customers and users to help us as part of that. So you've got a team of 5 or 6 people, one or two customers or users with, you know, a developer, a product manager, a designer, and you're saying something and the customer's saying, no, I don't actually really care about that. And that, again, helps refine and give them direction to what you're doing. Then we go out and, you know, validate those and test them. We're not going to necessarily make a decision based on, you know, a handful of people, but at least that provides us a lot better starting point to go for.
When facilitating a session where you're sort of collectively looking at possible value proposition, is it a good idea to, how do you facilitate that kind of session? I mean, one thing that comes to mind for me is that kind of session is generally going to be unproductive. Play a little devil's advocate here. That kind of session is going to be unproductive unless you frame the conversation not so much around the value proposition, but around the criteria, whether a value proposition. You're going to have a lot of people tossing out random, unsubstantiated opinions, and unless you can put the conversation around the criteria.
I think you're right. I mean, done poorly, it's going to be worse than not doing it at all. When I've done it, you know, usually it's been, we kind of do a kickoff, we present any research that's been done. You know, we've already, it's not like we get everyone together and say, hey, what should we build? You know, we have some idea, we've done some research, we've done some, you know, we have some third-party data that we've gathered. We've done some first-hand research already. You know, we have at least an idea of, hey, we want to build a product that does this, or we want to focus on this area, and here's the evidence we have to support it. And then one technique we've used is, if you're familiar with innovation games, it's a book and a website. There's a game called Design a Product Box, and I've heard about it from other, but basically you kind of put people together and say, look, you know, imagine you're designing some software, but the software is going to be sold, you know, like a item on the shelf that you buy at a grocery store or an office supply store. So you actually need to design, you know, what is the box that this product would come in, even if it's, you know, something that's downloadable or used on the web. So you kind of come up with a name, you come up with a little logo, and you come up with a couple of bullet points, and then you come up with, you know, I've done it, we have kind of the value proposition, again, using the crossing the chasm example as, you know, the value proposition that we come up with to support that. So hopefully people have some database, market data that they're using to base that on. And again, in this, some cases we've had it where we have actual users, customers, you know, involved in those teams. So they're the ones who we kind of, you know, take the direction from, and they say, oh, for people like me who have this sort of problem, you know, here's what this does, and here's why this is different. You know, here's why I don't like the other products that are on the market. They don't do X, Y, and Z because these other things don't solve my needs as well. So, you know, again, usually you come up with some interesting examples. Now, again, you know, if you have a large enough group, you might have three or four different examples of this, and then you want to kind of consolidate them, synthesize them, and then over time test and make sure you're on the right track. But it's an interesting way, again, to get people internally aligned and get everyone contributing to the value proposition and as far as kind of shaping it to some extent, and then hopefully, again, buying into it at the end much, much better. But I think it's a good point, Roger. If you just kind of say, oh, I'm going to get a bunch of people together and let's develop a value proposition with no background, you're going to have some problems.
Yeah, and I think you're pointing to processes to make that work better. And is it possible that one of the, what you were referring to there is the innovation games?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, Lou Coleman's innovation games, where there's a number of different sort of games that you can play in order to help you understand what kinds of product decisions you should be making.
I think this was a good discussion. Thanks to everyone on the call here and all those people who joined in on Twitter. It was I think this is a good topic. I think we don't spend enough time thinking and talking about this. We spend, you know, probably too much time working on the details of the product development and the engineering and the specs and things like that. And to me, these are the sort of things that product managers in general should be spending a lot more of their time and attention on. Again, whether you're in a large company or a small company, this is important. And as we talked about, you know, can really help get people aligned, can help drive the vision and the direction of your product, and you can help get investment or funding or support for whatever initiative you're doing. So I think this is a great discussion, and I learned a bunch of stuff, and hopefully other people did too.
I really appreciated the opportunity to co-host this, especially with Jeff Lash as the featured speaker. As he mentioned, we've had some contact in the past, including the last time he visited Austin. We ate burgers together. A restaurant called Stack Burger Bar.
Thank you so much, Jeff and Roger. Great discussion. This is the tip of the iceberg. It is a way to include more people via social media and in recognizing what important issues are. The value proposition is definitely the place to start. Erica, thank you for joining us. Product Camp Utah, again, is coming up this weekend.
The hashtag is PCamp Utah. The URL is PCampUtah.org.
And again, this is Cindy F. Solomon with the Global Product Management Talk. Please join us next week on Monday with Brian Lawley of the 280 Group. And thank you to the AIPMM at AIPMM for sponsoring this week's talk, and for the excellent information on the seven phases of the product management framework, and for developing the Prod Box, the product management body of knowledge. The upcoming San Francisco seminars on creating successful products and product innovation leadership. Also, thank you to our Twitter participants.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.